some hint of it as you have the text in front of you and you've gotten a handout that is titled Mercy. We're going to be looking today at not really the concept of mercy, though that is very much what is involved here, but rather more on target, more bullseye, more on point, more spot on, more exactly the epicenter of things. Not a word in English that is translating this word, but we're going to begin to look today at the word family. We'll give the family its name by its noun that is found more than its adjectival or verbal forms, the word chesed in Hebrew. Here is our text. All we want today is the A part of verse 18. Verse 25. Psalm 18, verse 25. With the merciful, you will show yourself merciful. And it is these two times that we see, at least in English, the word merciful that takes us into this family of words. Do you know offhand, Abigail, how long you've been coming here? Since 89? Okay, so 23 years. Okay, yesterday, Sunday when Ruby got up and walked out, I made an example of her, and I said, she's had enough of it. She said, I've been listening to this for 20 years, and I'm not listening to it anymore. And she thought, 20 years, that's a bit of an exaggeration. And then she started to think about it, and she said, a certain month this year will be 20 years for her. So Abigail's got her beat by 3 years, not that it's a competition. But I remember that when I first met Abigail, we were involved in a series on mercy. On Tuesday nights was the midweek meeting back then. So on Tuesday nights, I was going through every occurrence of every word that is translated as mercy in the Bible. And that meant that there were a number of words that get translated by this English word mercy in the Old Testament, and there is one in the New Testament. There might be another, but very rarely. It's almost always the same word in the New Testament. And that's not what we're going to do now, but we are going to be looking at many of these words in this, so far in our teaching, you might call it the mercy family, but it is the word chesed that we are looking at. In our text, with the merciful, you will show yourself merciful. These are actually two different words. The word that is rendered merciful here, there are two different words, but they're in the same family. With the merciful is the adjectival member of this family. And then you will show yourself merciful. This is the verbal member of this family. And so show merciful is the translation of that word there. So we're going to be looking at these as well. But we're going to start off to understand it with the noun form, by far the most common. Don't just be satisfied with the word mercy. I'm not satisfied with simply the word mercy. I'm becoming, as I become more familiar with chesed and its family, I'm becoming less and less satisfied with any word in English that actually is used to be suggested to capture this word. There's a lot here. With this word, we have just kind of talk about it and diagram it with you. There's this aspect of this word, A, aspect A, and then there's aspect B of this word, and it has a backdrop or a scene. That scene is issue C that we'll call it in dealing with this idea of mercy, and then you see it manifested in D, and so you've got A, B, C, D, and try to find an English word that captures that in and of itself, one English word that captures A, B, C, and D, and every time that you see that word in English, you can put that down in that place, and all the nuances, or what we call semantic domains, of that word chesed will be satisfied. I'm finding it very difficult to capture the noun with any one word, to capture the adjective with any one word. So, let's start, and we are going to be dealing with the text itself, which today is just the A part of this verse in front of us. Let's start where we ought to start. The logical start point, if we're to understand any Hebrew word. Let's start with the word itself. First of all, you will hear it maybe spoken as chesed, and that's not really how we want to pronounce it, all right? This is chesed. That is, it starts with this sound. Then a short E, as we would call it in English, then an S sound with a short E, and then it ends with, though it gets transliterated with a D, it's going to end with a hard TH sound, like in the beginning of the English definite article, the. So you're going to have chesev, all right? Chesev. The reason why it gets transliterated in something that will look like chesed to you, the CH is trying to transliterate this sound. In Hebrew, there is no ch, there is no CH sound like you're used to seeing in English, for instance, in the beginning of the word church, and the end of the word church. Hey, that's a good word, isn't it? To illustrate that CH sound in English. Church. That word, that sound that doesn't exist in Hebrew. And so in Hebrew, when you see transliterations in the Bible that have a CH on them, you never pronounce it ch, all right? If you see the word church in the Bible, that's an English word, and you should pronounce it church. All right, but if you're seeing a transliterated name, maybe that begins with CH, like Chedorlaomer. It's not Chedorlaomer. All right, doesn't have anything to do with cheese. Okay, it's Chedorlaomer. It's really, if you want to be very Hebraically accurate, you want to pronounce these names, you would want to say Chedorlaomer. But this CH is trying to bring out what I would transliterate as a KH, a sound that you would say, what does that mean? And that's a sound that we don't have, really, in English, in our pronunciation. So, the way we're pronouncing this word is chesed. And it's going to end with, in transliteration, it's going to end with a D. That's because the D, by the Ashkenazi, that is the ancient pronunciation of Hebrew, this same letter makes either a D sound or a rough TH sound like Z. All depending if there is a dot in the middle of that letter, which we call a dogesh. This does not have a dogesh in the letter. You don't pronounce it as a D, but as a Z sound. So, chesed is our word. Let's look at nine sources now as to definitions to define these words. These are nine academic Hebrew sources. The first is from Strong. A lot of people don't use Strong, that is the Hebrew dictionary in the back of your Strong's exhaustive concordance. I think it is intellectual pride that is the reason. Strong is actually a very good source. I think that it's, you know, quasi-academia that says English speakers can use Strong's. Anybody can use a Strong's. Look at the number that's over there on the side and go to the number at the back. You don't even have to know Hebrew to do that. And so I think that they don't want to associate themselves with the, you know, limited to English rabble that's out there. And so this pseudo-intellectualism dismisses of James Strong and his dictionary in the back of the concordance. But actually, it's a very good source for both Hebrew and Greek. Strong defines chesed as kindness. Then Osborne, author of a lexicon, defines it favor, kindness, mercy, goodness, benevolence. Try to take all of these together as we say them, kind of get a mental picture of what chesed is really all about. Vine says it includes the qualities of kindly affection and loyalty. And the New American Standard Hebrew Dictionary defines it goodness, kindness. All right, the Dictionary of Biblical Languages with Semantic Domains defines it as loyal love, unfailing kindness, devotion, in other words, a love or affection that is steadfast based on a prior relationship. Favor, in other words, the giving of benefits. The theological word book of the Old Testament, after a lengthy discussion of this word, says, the word loving kindness of the KJV is archaic, but not far from the fullness of the meaning of the word. In the past, when I've translated this, I've translated it loving kindness because of that which they're referring to as the fullness of the meaning of the word. I've, in the past at least, thought that this was probably our best option. You've got the idea of love there. There has to be a relationship whenever there is love between two parties, and then the kindness that kind of flows from that relationship. Then you have Girdlestone's synonyms of the Old Testament. His treatment of the word that he calls mercy is what I've handed out to you. So this is four pages, and it has at the end of this, if you forget who that is, at the end of your fourth page, it says where this is from. And so you can read that on your own, and it's actually very good. And my problem with reading things today and then wanting to hand them out to you is that usually I... Oh, that doesn't show up at all, does it? That red. Well, you can, if you can see that, can anybody see that very well enough to read that? All right. My problem with handing things out to you nowadays is that when I study, I usually want, I'm studying something that's originally language-based. And therefore, I always think, if I hand this out, there's at least three different fonts here. There's the English that they can read, but then there's just They're just referring to the Hebrew words there in Hebrew script, and the same with Greek words in Greek script. So I don't know how much you can get out of it, but I found this very well, and I thought, you know what? I'll just give it to them. And I'll just write out when you see, for instance, this first word looks like starts with a small e, or maybe a backwards 3 is the better way to say it. When you see that in your text, that's eleos, and skip one and go to the next one, that's eleein, and that is mercy and to show mercy, respectively. You can come up and get this. Go and get this afterwards, because this really isn't showing up on our screen. I won't use red again, but if you want to come up and look at that, that can decipher some of the Hebrew and Greek font and text in your handout, and then you can just read it and make it out by referring to your key. But in white and Unger, their expository dictionary of the Old Testament. This one is a little more lengthy, so I thought I will read this to you. This is how they translate chesed. Or not translate, they're going to kind of talk about it. Loving kindness, steadfast love, grace, mercy, faithfulness, goodness, devotion. Then they, a little further down in their article on such, they say, the Septuagint nearly always renders chesed with eleos, mercy. That is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament almost always renders this word chesed with the word that I will translate and have translated for you in the LMT, whenever you have it, eleos, as mercy. Now, I don't know that that's, that may be somewhat misleading when they say that, when it says Septuagint nearly always renders it that way. The majority of the time, it renders it with this Greek word, eleos, that means mercy. But I'll let you decide if this is almost always. It's used 240 times in the Old Testament, Hebrew Old Testament. So 240 times. 135 of those times, the Septuagint renders it by eleos. I don't think that's really an overwhelming majority. What about the other 105 times that they render it as something else? But it is a majority, it's a slight majority, but the majority of times as eleos, this word mercy. Sometimes it is rendered, or the word family, by some form of the Greek word hosios, which means holy. That's usually rendering the adjective of this word family. And many times it's rendered by charis, that is the word that we translate grace. So if you can get anything out of this, the way that the Septuagint translators try to capture this word, chesed, if we kind of put a lot of stock in the translators' choices, is somewhere between or including grace and mercy. It goes on to say, modern translations, in contrast, generally prefer renditions close to the word grace. KJV usually has mercy, although loving kindness, following Coverdale, favor, and other translations also occur. What does that mean? Loving kindness, usually the KJV uses the word mercy, but sometimes loving kindness, following Coverdale, Coverdale was one of the, Miles Coverdale was one of the earliest English translators of the Hebrew and Greek into the English. And he is credited with actually coining the term, loving kindness, because he was trying to find a word that could capture chesed. And the words that he had, grace, mercy, love, devotion, he's saying none of these are actually doing it justice. And so he is credited with actually coining the word loving kindness. In that time in England, the Bible was a big deal. Not like today. In Western-speaking, English-speaking countries, nobody knows the Bible, unless you're a believer and a student of it. In the days of Coverdale, the Bible was very important. If you were educated, you had to have read the Bible. It was the classic of classics as far as works that were translated into English, and every educated person was very conversant, even if they weren't believers, in the Bible. And so this coining of a translation for chesed really caught on. But now, it's generally considered an archaic word. I kind of really like the word, actually. It says the RSV, we're still quoting with my commentary interspersed between it, we're still quoting from White and Unger's Expository Dictionary of the Old Testament. It goes on, RSV, that is Revised Standard Version, generally prefers steadfast love. NIV often offers simply love. In general, one may identify three basic meanings of the word, which always interact. Strength, steadfastness, and love. Any understanding of the word that fails to suggest all three inevitably loses some of its richness. Love, by itself, that is the NIV rendering that it's commenting on, easily becomes sentimentalized or universalized apart from the covenant. So they're saying we're not really choosing that rendering. Yet, strength or steadfastness suggest only the fulfillment of a legal or other obligation. The word refers primarily to mutual and reciprocal rights and obligations between the parties of a relationship, especially Yahweh and Israel. But chesed is not only a matter of obligation. It is also of generosity. It is not only a matter of loyalty, but also of mercy. The weaker party seeks the protection and blessing of the patron and protector. But he may not lay absolute claim to it. The stronger party remains committed to his promise, but retains his freedom, especially with regard to the manner in which he will implement those promises. Chesed implies personal involvement and commitment in a relationship beyond the rule of law. And then there's much more here that they're talking about, but just a couple other sentences. Hence, devotion is sometimes the single English word best able to capture the nuance of the original. The RSV attempts to bring this out by its translation, steadfast love. So the King James Version is going to translate this in a number of ways. Chesed then gets translated as kindness, mercy, pity, favor, goodness, and loving kindness. I've already said that the Septuagint translates it with charis, that is grace, hosios, one of the synonyms that gets translated holiness, and most of the time as eleos. All right, now let's take what we've just learned about this and plug it in to this verse. First off, let's combine the ideas of a loyalty or a steadfastness in the, how shall we say it, in the expression of this chesed with the sentiment or the feeling that is behind it. And we come up with something like this: dedicated mercy or devoted kindness or committed love. In the early 20th century, some made a lot of the connection between a covenant and chesed. In my opinion, they made too much of it. They made it a purely covenantal thing. What they did was this. It's an error that we studied in our hermeneutics class not too long ago that we called over-specification. That is, when a word has this kind of width of meaning, and that we've seen it has, and you see that it is often used in connection with another concept in the Bible, and you put too much weight on that connection so that you miss the other connections, the other nuances of the word, and you say, this word means this, and you limit it too much so that it's limited to a covenant. The idea is that if I'm going to make a covenant with you, and I have made some in the past, I've made covenants, I've even called them that, with individuals in the past. One of them I have to keep every day. I don't know if the person who I made it with, it was a reciprocal covenant, it was a mutual covenant, it was an agreement to pray a certain thing for a certain person every day for the rest of our lives. I don't actually agree with making covenants like that anymore, but I do it every day. I pray for a certain individual according to a certain prayer in the Bible. I do it when I take a shower. That way, I do this every day. So every day, if I can connect it with something I do every day, I will remember to do that. That's a covenant. Now, this person that I made this covenant with, I like them. I had a relationship with them. They liked me. They had a relationship with me. The idea of chesed in a covenant is that it doesn't come about as a result of the covenant, though there may be aspects of sort of an expected chesed that comes because you have this covenant. But chesed was the reason that we made the covenant. In other words, it wasn't something that was so objective that it was objectified. It wasn't something that was just, you know, I'm doing this because I'm devoted to you. I don't particularly like you. I don't really want to do this. I have no affection behind it. There isn't any love here. It's just I'm willing to enter into a legal agreement with you. We generally don't make covenants that have anything to do with chesed with people that we don't already have a kind feeling for. I made another covenant. It's definitely a covenant. When I got married, I didn't think like, I think this is the right thing to do. I think that God would have me marry this person. I really don't like this person. I don't want to be married to this person. You know, you might get the idea when you hear some believers talk about God's mystical, magical providence that's working behind how He's getting them married. Like, that's the way it happened. Like, it could be that. You know, like, you hear people, usually single people, and parents. Single people and parents in relation to their kids. They would talk often about, like, you know, that person that God's going to lead them to, that He wants them to marry. And this is somewhat of what we might call an evangelical superstition. Where do we get that in the Bible? We don't get that anywhere out of the Bible. You know, the book that we say that our faith is based on. Rather, in the Bible, you get language like this. You get, like, about the widow who is now free to marry. Paul says that she is free to marry anyone whom that she wants to. Only in the Lord. So there are certain parameters that the Lord has put there, but it's not like, you know, my wife, how am I ever going to figure out how many, what is it, 7 billion people on the earth today? Half of them are female. How am I ever going to find just that right woman, and how could I ever know that it's her? How do I know that it's not, you know, that while this person looks good, I'm not talking about physically, I'm just saying this looks like this could really be, that she's a godly person, and, you know, she agrees with me in doctrine and whatever. How do you really know that, like, I'm not going to meet somebody 5 years from now? That's the one. And I missed it. And now for the rest of my life, I'm outside of the will of God because I missed that person. That's not the way it is. God actually leaves it up to you whether you will marry at all. That's the whole point of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. So it shouldn't be that you enter into a covenant with someone, a marriage covenant with someone that you think is something that's purely covenantal. There's just a covenantal aspect to this. There isn't anything, there's no feeling here, there's no emotion, there's no affection. Rather, when we get married, even if it goes sour, even if it's turned wrong, even if you look back on it and you say, I should have never married this person. Still, when you did, you thought that it wouldn't be that way. You had this, people call it love. You had this love for this person, right? And that's what made it that you wanted to enter into a covenant with that individual, a covenant that we call marriage. Now, I know that there are different situations. I know that there are places like you could say, you could object to this. I'm talking in generalities. I know that there is such a thing as arranged marriages. I know that there are marriages that people were kind of, by circumstances or family or whatever, forced into, and you weren't really forced into it. But the point is that the idea of making that covenant didn't make it that there was chesed now. And chesed is something that humans have for other humans as well. It's not just something that is God. Like, God has it for humans, but humans don't have it for humans. That, you know, it's this vertical thing, and there's no horizontal expression of it. There's a horizontal expression of it. It is used all the time in relation to things and people on the earth. It's even in our text, right? If we stuck with the translation merciful, you really can't be merciful to God, can you? So if you are merciful You have to be merciful on this earthly plane of things. God is saying, with those who are functional, who are operative in this chesed, they are those who indeed have received it, and your handout will go into this toward the end of its treatment of chesed, but we receive it, but we also can give it, and if we are positive to live according to God, and that will mean living according to His chesed, we're going to be people who display this kindness. Mercy fits there because people let us down, because people don't deserve, people do not earn or merit certain things. Now, this is the problem I have, though, with translating it as mercy. It's not always something that's undeserved. It's not always seen as something that is purely, freely given with no thought of what the other does. And mercy in English tends to carry that connotation with it. Abimelech will speak to Abraham and to Isaac, and he will say, listen, since we have shown you chesed, show us chesed in turn and make a covenant with us. Do you see how there the making of that covenant has a chesed that precedes it? Since we've shown you chesed, show us chesed because of our previous chesed. You in chesed prior to the making of this covenant as even the means, the motive for making this covenant. Make this covenant with us so the chesed wasn't dependent on the covenant, but the covenant was dependent upon the chesed. So mercy, as an English word, has this aspect to it that's falling short of all that's involved in chesed. Now, that's not to down mercy as a translation, because mercy is going to, the fate of mercy here is going to be shared with many of the other words that we could choose here as well. It's very difficult to fully capture the idea of chesed, especially when it's in relation to God. We certainly can't call it mercy if we're talking to God. We'll look at some of these places later. I'm just giving you an idea. Today we're trying to nail down the idea that is involved in this word chesed. And then we're going to see some of the most poignant and salient examples, some of the most powerful uses of the word as we encounter it in the Old Testament in times coming up, in installments of this in the future. But one of the places where we see this is in Jeremiah 2. God is looking back to a time when, figuratively, He first espoused Israel to Himself. And He says, I remember the chesed of your espousals. In other words, He remembers the chesed that Israel in its beginning days, in its smallness, in its germinal form that Israel had for Yahweh. So it can't be mercy. We can't just say mercy all the time, because God doesn't ever need mercy, right? I mean, mercy has two aspects to it. When we help someone, because we're the one, like this is what White and Unger were talking about, we have the ability to help somebody else. We don't have an obligation to help that somebody else, unless we're believers. Now we largely have an obligation. But with, even as believers, you don't have an obligation to help every person in the ways that they want you to help them. So if you do, you've shown mercy. Or if we have that idea of desert, of merit, of something that is earned to it, and that in the case of mercy is lacking, it's not there, it's non-existent, we can't ever say that anybody has chesed for God. If we're translating, we can say that they have chesed for God. God said they did. But we can't say that anyone ever has had mercy for God. Because God deserves, God merits, God is worthy of our lives. He is worthy of loving Him with all of our heart, mind, soul, strength. We'll never give anything to God that's a mercy, either by way of something that He didn't deserve, but we're going to be very magnanimous, God, and give you this anyway. Nor do we ever help Him in something that He absolutely needed us for. None of us are, in the absolute sense of the word, indispensable as it comes to God. God can use somebody else. So, chesed, I'm saying probably mercy isn't really going to tag it. Because there will be places like that in Jeremiah 2 that mercy isn't going to work. So, chesed is sometimes a result of a covenant. There is the chesed of the covenant. You'll see that in the Old Testament. We'll see it in time to come. But it's not limited to that, like, hey, I'm in covenant with this person. I've got to do this for them. While that obligation might be there, and that might be an expression of chesed, there was a chesed that initiated that covenant when there weren't any obligations to begin with. If we talk about this, and that's how we can overdo the idea of a covenant, then chesed becomes just an action without any reality behind it, if we were to define it that way. What is agape? I tell you, I've done this. I've read Greek sources, I've read Greek books about agape, and then Hebrew books about chesed. And the definitions, it's like, I could just take these and switch them from those books. Chesed looks like agape. But I wouldn't translate it as love. Because there's another word, ahav, that gets consistently translated in the New Testament as agape, not chesed. When I look at the definition in a Greek book talking about something in the New Testament, namely charis, and then I look at chesed, I say, this definition of the Old Testament chesed looks just like the definition of this New Testament word charis. All right, now I really have a problem, right? Because I've got two words in Greek that seem like that's the perfect word for chesed. And those words never translate in the New Testament chesed. Eleos, which definitely in the New Testament we should translate as mercy, is the word that translates chesed. So, if I can put the two testaments together, this is what I get out of chesed. Chesed is, I'm going to try to just give you the full orb to everything of Chesed right now. Chesed is an often utterly undeserved, totally unmerited, and absolutely unearnable. Kindness and goodness that comes, that springs out of the beneficence, the goodness of the heart of the person who is extending that chesed. It is a mercy, but it's more than a mercy. It is kindness, but it's more than kindness. It's a kindness that is motivated by the love that is behind it. Why does agape look like so much like chesed? When I read agape's definition, it's because of the dedication, devotion, committed idea that is inherent and embedded in chesed. So it's this, it is like the word in the Old Testament. I mean, if we were to say, what is, you know, the word in the New Testament that really defines God's heart toward us, we're going to be torn between charis eleos and agape. We're going to be torn by, between, that is, grace, devotion, and mercy in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, definitely. Hands down, definitely, it's chesed. This is how God deals with us as His people. Once you become one of the people of God, let me tell you, you got that way by chesed. Because mercy and grace in the New Testament are the words that are rallied, the words that are utilized to describe how it is that we became believers. Listen, by grace, you have been saved through belief. That is, God graced us, and that not of yourselves, that what? Not of yourselves. Here's a problem that, not a problem, but for those people who get grammar rules, and they haven't entered into the spirit of the language, or the spirit of the author who's using that language, this just mystifies people because they've been taught. They have a grammatical rule when you learn Greek, and it says that if you are to have a pronoun and there is person, number, and gender in Greek, you've got to have that thing's got to fit in person, number, and gender. Well, the word that is not of you, doesn't fit antecedents. For by grace is feminine. You have been saved through faith. Faith is feminine. And that is neuter. So it's not talking about grace, and it's not talking about belief. What is it talking about? What's talking about something that isn't a noun in the context? It's talking about something in the context. You have been saved. You have been saved. But you have been saved. That's not a noun. So your mind has to supply the noun that the pronoun doesn't fit with in gender on purpose, so that you don't limit it to grace and you don't limit it to belief. Grace is a part of it. Belief is a part of it. But the whole idea, all right, here's a term, I hope you enjoy this, because I never use this Christianese term. So enjoy it now. The whole plan of salvation, all right, that whole thing is grace. From the beginnings when you weren't alive, when the world wasn't created, but God knew that there would be a person named that, from before, from the furthest thing that we could think of, that we could go back in time, the beginning of the world, the foundation of the world, from before the foundation of the world, this is an awesome thing. I'm going to apply it to me. You apply it to yourself. This is an awesome thing. Before the foundation of the world, before God created, before Genesis 1, there was a scroll in heaven listing all of the names of the people that would be saved out of the fall and condemnation of the people that would populate a planet that wasn't even made yet. And thus, that was because you didn't do anything to deserve it, and the Scripture makes it very clear it's not based on foreseen fate either. That foreordination was a matter of grace. That predestination was a matter of grace. That election or that choosing was a matter of grace. And we have to have a just basis upon which these ones who will be saved, because they were lost, they were condemned and they are held deserving, have to have a just basis that God can save those people. So, we've got to have somebody die for their sins. That somebody, because there's not just one name on that list, that somebody has to be an eternal being whose finite death in time is equal to and far beyond the eternity futures of the second death of anyone or all of them put together. So God's got to do it. The Son of God, God Himself in essence, will become a man and die on the cross in their place. That's grace. Then, because you can't believe it, because you're in bondage, you're enslaved to the darkness of the fall, we're going to have to make these people believe it. We're going to have to give them faith and cause them to believe it. You know what that is? That's grace. The regeneration that is the new birth, the new creation, the new creature that you were made into that automatically believes that, that's called mercy in Titus 3:5. So what is it that is of grace? The whole plan of salvation. In other words, from eternity past in the mind of God, never having had a beginning, and all of the points that were involved in getting us saved. That was grace, and grace, New Testament grace, is a part of Old Testament chesed. New Testament agape is a part of Old Testament chesed. I'm telling you, this chesed is so rich, it's so full, it's so encapsulating the ideas of some of the most precious words, New Testament, when it comes to how God thinks of us. You know what? I really like the God of grace. I really need the God of grace. I mean, the God, this grace piece is huge, but chesed is huger. Because the one is submerged in the other. The idea of agape is submerged in chesed. It's the reason, it's the motive that was in the heart of God that prompted Him to even do this for us in the first place. That's chesed. That's the feeling aspect. That's the motive aspect that initiated this situation, this chesed that we live in now. So mercy is a part of chesed, but chesed is so much more than mercy. Devotion is a part of chesed, but chesed is more than just devotion. Almost like this. If you put the two of them together, and that's why I landed, and I'm actually rethinking this, because it's still too big for this. That's why I landed with loving kindness as the translation of chesed. Because loving is the agape connection, kindness is the mercy connection. You've got motive, loving, and action, kindness, and both of them are there in chesed. That's why I like this word that one of our sources said. It's archaic, but it probably still is the best word to capture all that's involved in chesed. Now, I have agape, right? I've got agape, and that's involved in chesed, and I've got mercy, and that's involved in chesed, in that God actually did something, many things, all the time, for us. But I often don't deserve that. And there's where grace is part of this chesed. Chesed, you could see why, not just in the sense of time. You know, when you read, His mercy is everlasting. You know that always comes up in the Old Testament? That mercy, they're trying to translate chesed there. His mercy is unbounded, or let's put it this way, His chesed is transcendent. His chesed isn't limited. His chesed is infinite, not just as relates to time, forever, but as relates to direction. I mean, it's taking care of us in every way possible. If we think of salvation-related things associated with the death of the Lord Jesus Christ, it's the word that initiated expiation. Expiation is when God fully covers all of the provisions necessary as to your salvation. That's expiation in the death of the Lord Jesus Christ. That's chesed in redemption. That's the breadth and width and height and depth. See how you even talk about it like it's agape in the New Testament. That's chesed in operation in things salvific. So we've got this gigantic principle, this huge word, with 240 uses of just the noun form of it in the Old Testament, and we won't look at all of them, but we've got a really large and caring, compassionate, sympathetic, good display toward us in a very comprehensive way in this word chesed that is in front of us. And we've got this challenge. This will be the challenge in weeks to come. We've got this challenge to find or to arrive at the best English word that captures the enormity of God's heart toward us. We shouldn't translate it that way, but let's put it this way. This is the idea behind chesed. It is the positive enormity of God's heart toward us. More in coming weeks, and we still have to kind of plug all of that into our verse. The one having ears to be hearing, let him be hearing.